Sarah, Barbara, Lomax, and Cousins come in ready for walking. Barbara crosses the room to the window and looks out. Cousins drifts amiably to the armchair, and Lomax remains near the door, whilst Sarah comes to her mother.
Go and get ready, Mama. The carriage is waiting.
Lady Britomart leaves the room. Undershaft addresses Sarah.
Good day, my dear. Good afternoon, Mr. Lomax.
How-de-do.
Quite well after last night, Euripides, eh?
As well as can be expected.
That's right. So, you are coming to see my death and devastation factory, Barbara?
You came yesterday to see my salvation factory. I promised you a return visit.
You'll find it awfully interesting. I've been to the Woolwich Arsenal. It gives you a ripping sense of security, you know, to think of the lot of beggars we could kill if it came to fighting. Still, it must be rather an awful reflection for you, Mr. Undershaft, from the religious point of view, as it were. You're getting on, you know, and all that.
You don't mind Charlie's imbecility, Papa, do
you? Oh, I say!
Mr. Lomax looks at the matter in a very proper spirit, my dear.
Just so, that's all I meant, I assure you.
Are you coming, Stephen?
Well, I am rather busy. Oh, well, yes. I'll come. That is, if there's room for me.
I can take two with me and a little motor I'm experimenting with for field use. You won't mind its being rather unfashionable. It's not painted yet, but it's bulletproof.
Lomax is appalled at the prospect of confronting Wilton Crescent in an unpainted motor.
Oh, I say.
The carriage for me, thank you. Barbara doesn't mind what she's seen in.
I say, Dolly, old chap, do you really mind the car being a guy? Because, of course, if you'll do it, I'll go in it, still.
I prefer it.
Thanks awfully, old man. Come, Sarah.
Lomax hurries out to secure his seat in the carriage. Sarah follows him. Cousins moodily walks across to Lady Britomart's writing table.
Why are we two coming to this works department of hell? That is what I ask myself.
I have always thought of it as a sort of pit where lost creatures with blackened faces stirred up smoky fires and were driven and tormented by my father. Is it like that, Dad?
Dear, it is a spotlessly clean and beautiful hillside town.
With a Methodist chapel? Oh, do say there's a Methodist chapel.
There are two. A primitive one and a sophisticated one. There is even an ethical society, but it is not much patronized, as my men are all strongly religious. In the high explosive sheds, they object to the presence of agnostics as unsafe.
And yet they don't object to you.
Do they obey all your orders?
I never give them any orders. When I speak to one of them, it is, well, Jones, is the baby doing well? And has Mrs. Jones made a good recovery? Nicely, thank you, sir, and that's all.
But Jones has to be kept in order. How do you maintain discipline among your men?
I don't. They do. You see, the one thing Jones won't stand is any rebellion from the man under him, or any assertion of social equality between the wife of the man with 4 shillings a week less than himself and Mrs. Jones. Of course, they all rebel against me, theoretically, but practically every man of them keeps the man just below him in his place. I never meddle with them. I never bully them. I don't even bully Lazarus. I say that certain things are to be done, but I don't order anybody to do them. I don't say, mind you, that there is no ordering about and snubbing and even bullying. The men snub the boys and order them about. The carmen snub the sweepers. The artisans snub the unskilled laborers. The foremen drive and bully both the laborers and artisans. The assistant engineers find fault with the foreman. The chief engineer drop on the assistants. The departmental managers worry the chiefs. And the clerks have tall hats and hymn books and keep up the social tone by refusing to associate on equal terms with anybody. The result is a colossal profit, which comes to me.
You really are a... Well, what I was saying yesterday.
What was he saying yesterday?
Oh, never mind, my dear. He thinks I have made you unhappy. Have I?
Do you think I can be happy in this vulgar, silly dress? I who have worn the uniform. Do you understand what you have done to me? Yesterday, I had a man's soul in my hand. I set him in the way of life with his face to salvation, and when we took your money, he turned back to drunkenness and derision. I will never forgive you that. If I had a child, and you destroyed its body with your explosives, if you murdered Dolly with your horrible guns, I could forgive you if my forgiveness would open the gates of heaven to you. But to take a human soul from me and turn it into the soul of a wolf, that is worse than any murder.
does my daughter despair so easily? Can you strike a man to the heart and leave no mark on him?
Barbara's face lights up.
Oh, you are right. He can never be lost now. Where was my faith?
Oh, clever, clever devil.
You may be a devil, but God speaks through you sometimes.
She takes her father's hands and kisses them.
You have given me back my happiness. I feel it deep down now, though my spirit is troubled.
You have learned something that always feels at first as if you had lost something.
Well, take me to the factory of death and let me learn something more. There must be some truth or other behind all of this frightful irony. Come, Dolly.
Barbara goes out.
My guardian angel. Avant!
Cousins follows Barbara.
You must not mind Cousins, Father. He's a very amiable good fellow, but he is a Greek scholar and naturally a little eccentric.
Oh, quite so. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you.
Undershaft goes out. Stephen smiles patronizingly, buttons his coat responsibly, and crosses the room to the door. Lady Britomart, dressed for out of doors, opens it before he reaches it. She looks round for the others, looks at Stephen, and turns to go, without a word. Stephen is embarrassed.
Mother.
Don't be apologetic, Stephen. And don't forget that you have outgrown your mother.
Lady Britomart goes out.